Hi, I'm Stephanie Lemick, and this is the Building Trauma Informed Workplaces podcast. I'm super excited. We have another amazing guest joining us today, and really excited to be able to talk about his work and a topic that can be tricky to bring up, and that is grief in the workplace. So thrilled to have the opportunity to cover this topic. Justin, welcome. It is so great to have you with us, and I would love if you would introduce yourself to our listeners.
Yeah, thank you, Stephanie, for having us and considering us to be on your show with your audience and, you know, the community that you're building. My name is Justin Clifford. I work at Bereave. We are a startup that is focused on helping employers and their people navigate death.
Yeah, absolutely. So super interested, you know, I think for those of us listening who are HR practitioners who have been kind of HR people operations in this career path or a previous one, death shows up at work a lot. And it's one of those things we kind of don't talk about. And trauma is one of those things we don't talk about at work, and it's coming up a lot. And I can think of, you know, times when an individual had, you know, an experience of death of someone they loved, a family member, and that impacted them. And it certainly impacted how they were showing up at work. But I've also experienced, unfortunately, as an HR leader, experiencing death of team members and how that impacts the larger workplace as well. So really there's a lot there that can be impacting our teams and our workplaces. And it's one of those really tricky, challenging things. So it's no secret, I'm a huge fan of the work you and the team at Bereave are doing. And I'm so grateful that we're talking about this because it is really important.
Yeah. It is very important. And frankly, before I got involved with Bereave, I didn't realize how important it actually was. Even having been a manager of people for, I don't know, 15 years, even in those moments of loss, whether that's a pregnancy loss or the loss of a loved one, loss of an employee, like I probably did not show up very well. Mostly because I hadn't really ever been trained and I didn't understand it myself. And I think that's a very common thing to have happen. And it turns out the implications across a business can be vast depending on the nuance in the situation.
Absolutely. It's such a great point too around the training, because I think what's super challenging when we get to something like grief is almost all of us are touched in some way in our lives by grief. And so that's informing how we're showing up at work, how we're showing up as managers, and how we kind of look to support our individual team members. And sometimes it's not the best route. It's not the best way. So I love the idea of resources, training. I'm a big proponent of more resources and training for managers anyway. So sure. love the work that's happening. I am just, first of all, super curious. I think our listeners are probably curious too. How did Bereave come to be? Kind of what's the origin story?
Yeah, well, there are three co-founders of Bereave. Two of them experienced the premature loss of parents. And them having been friends for, you know, a long time in their lives growing up, together or close to together, you know, we're going through their own journeys and grieving together to some degree and really thinking about the whole process. And both of them have this very entrepreneurial mind. And they started talking about like all the impediments to like a peaceful navigation, right? One of them, Matt, talks about how he missed all of the people that flew in from all over the country to be with their family because he was bouncing around and doing all of this coordination and, you know, talked about his how he put grieving his mother off for 9 months and where that ended up. And, you know, through these conversations of like, hey, this is wrong and this is wrong and this is unfair and all these things, it just got to seem like we can do better. Not just as a society, but like just even the commercialization of how we experience and navigate where you go and who you go to and what happens when you get there, all the way through the navigation of your own grief journey, how work is involved, and all of the kind of the nooks and crannies. And what has evolved is what we do today. And the reason it evolved that way is because people have been incredibly generous, raising their hand on a very consistent basis to say, hey, let me tell you about my own story. And when you talk to people over and over and over and have these conversations, these themes start to emerge. And it was so abundantly clear that the experience that occurs at work, how an employer reacts, how their manager reacts, is not only incredibly critical to the grief journey, but it's also incredibly critical to the employee experience. So these moments are so important, and we have built Bereave because of Matt's experience and Elijah's experience, but all of these other thousands of experiences that have been shared with us really built around those experiences so that people can hopefully find some level of peace as they navigate their own specific losses.
It's so important. It's so powerful because, I mean, even as I think about my own experience that I spent in-house in, you know, HR roles, probably a common story you hear, you know, I tried my best. I tried to offer support, offer resources, and it can become really tricky because a lot of times people need kind of unique customized support. They need different things and they may not ask for it, or they may, like you said, you know, delay the grief process. And so much of what we end up doing, you know, in HR, in the employment, in the benefit space is like, what's right in front of our faces? Mm-hmm. What are those things we're always talking about? And, you know, it's the impact to the employee, their own experience, their own journey with grief, but also their employee experience. I also think there's a really big impact for, you know, HR professionals, managers, and leaders as well, as it relates to how they can navigate kind of the compassion fatigue or even secondary trauma of trying to help support someone through a very challenging time, a very challenging experience without the right tools and resources. Yeah. I think that's also something I think that gets overlooked, is another really great benefit of the work you're doing is, yes, you're supporting individual employees. Yes, you're supporting employee experience, but you're also supporting managers, leaders, HR professionals, benefits professionals, so they have the right tools to create the right experiences without having to kind of get to a place of compassion fatigue and burnout, which is so, so common in our industry.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it's really interesting that you say that. I had a conversation with one of our partners recently. She was the chief people officer at a very well-known company that you would recognize, and had been in roles like that throughout her career. And one of the things that she said really stuck with me. And she said something to the effect of like, I don't care how empathetic you are or how empathetic your managers are or how empathetic you think your team is. At the moment of impact, everybody needs something to hold on to.
Yeah.
Right. And for us, luckily, she said, Bereave is that thing, which was great. I appreciated that. But at the same time, you get to thinking about, like, even if you are prepared, right? And she used a couple of examples of a hospital, a high infection rate at a hospital, and really just giving people that were in the operating room very specific thing to hold on to by putting a poster on the wall. Right? Yeah. Because even at when emotion kicks up, you can become disoriented. Yes. It doesn't matter how many times you've done it, it can happen. If you become disoriented, you need somewhere to go. And it's interesting, one of our, you were talking about like the thing that's in front of you, right? Addressing, especially in HR, like there's always a fire, like let's put out the thing that's in front of us and the most important today. And one of our customers actually became a customer because the two women that are running HR at this company had been talking about how the word bereavement was on their to-do list, and it kept getting knocked down. And like, we know we need to address it. and then someone would suffer a loss and they would revert right back into the old way of handling it. And they just kept said, we need to do a better job, but we don't really know how to do it. But we've had this to do on our list and we don't really know what to do with it. We walked through our platform and they're like, yeah, this checks that off our list. Like, this is exactly what we were hoping to have, because they just couldn't get to it because it wasn't always in their face until it was in their face. And if you hadn't prepared, you end up doing the same type of behaviors that you were trying to avoid in the first place.
Absolutely. And it's so important. I mean, you know, I've had many conversations. I just had a great conversation, you know, a few weeks ago with Jen Laurie on the podcast about how sometimes, you know, those old policies that we kind of rely on in HR, we go back to, we don't have to rely on or look at very often. When we pull them out, they paint us into a really like just crappy corner. Very mm-hmm. not empathetic. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember in my first full-time job out of college as an HR professional, our bereavement policy had certain days assigned to certain relationships, and you needed to bring something to show that someone had passed away. Like, hey, also, by the way, can you prove that, you know, you had a loss? And that was it. That was all. And it was nothing about supporting someone. It was more about, well, let's make sure you're not lying. And like, what a crummy approach to bereavement. Mm-hmm. And I think there are many much better iterations of kind of that old school philosophy, that old school policy. But again, it's still so often hugely falling short from what people need and what employers really want to be able to do in terms of creating that sense of loyalty and positive employee experience.
Yeah. We get asked about that all the time. Like, well, what if people take advantage? And I ask, like, are you concerned that people might take advantage of your bereavement policy? And sometimes people say yes. And I don't think that's something that bereaved can help with. There are different issues that somebody else has to help with. Either hiring or culture or some level of trust, there's something else is broken there. But yet it happens all the time. I mean, people are asked to give proof because they're worried that somebody's going to take 3 days off because that's what their policy says, right? And you know what? There might be people that take advantage of those situations, but I would very much over-index on, you know, the 90-95% of the people that aren't going to do that.
Well, I 100% agree. And I think you said it so perfectly. The issue isn't your bereavement policy. The issue is something else. And I tend to agree. It's there's something there around trust or psychological safety in your organization that needs to be addressed. It's not the root cause. It's not a robust bereavement policy or bereavement resources. Yeah. Absolutely. So I'd love to, you know, if you don't mind, at a very high level, would you share a little bit about, you know, the resources, the support that Bereave offers? So folks can kind of have in mind, you know, what exactly this could look like, you know, for them, for their organization.
Yeah. And you know, just to be clear, we're a software company, right? So we have a software platform that does two things. One, it helps employees navigate their grief journey or their specific loss in a very timely, you know, that is recent. It helps them support friends and family if they don't know what to do. It helps navigate pet loss, right? So it gives people the resources and the tools to be able to do those things, not just at home, but also with their families and shareable with their families so that they can kind of all be aligned and consolidated. One of the things that we heard over and over and over again, and we still hear it, is that people say, you know, tell us about their loss. And they say, we didn't know where to turn. We didn't know what to do, right? Yeah. So they Google what to do when someone dies. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, and I encourage you, if you're listening, like, go ahead and do it. You're probably going to get hit with just a bunch of funeral home ads. You might get hit with a bunch of blogs that are 3,000 words long, and you have to go through and pick apart like what it is. We wanted to create something very tactical, very practical. So very bullet pointed, very straight to the point of what you need to go do, but also how to go do it. Yeah. Right. So If you need to get a locksmith, you know, my dad is single, right? When my dad dies, I'm going to need to figure out how to secure his home, right? Yeah. Probably gonna need to call a locksmith. Let's link to locksmiths in that area, right? Just as a very tactical thing, right? So really helping people in that at that moment of impact all the way through at least that first year of what they're going to need to be working through, whether that's their grief journey or closing the car insurance and working through probate and working on selling the house, like all of those types of things that might need to happen. On the flip side of that, at the same conversation that we were having when people said we didn't know where to turn, what they also said was something like this. They would say, here's who we lost. Sometimes here's how we lost them. Here's when they died. Here's what my manager said, and here's what my employer did. And they would go on and tell the story. Mm-hmm. And it's always this weird conversation. I'm like, hold on a second. Why are you talking about work right now?
Yeah.
But that piece is so critical. And I mentioned it earlier, it's so critical to how somebody is able to maneuver through their both their emotions and the things that need to get done, the logistics, all of those things. If they are thinking about how much time they have off, are they going to get paid? When do they need to go back? When are they not going to get paid? Do they need to take a leave of absence? What's the rule? What's the policy? Where are these things, right? Yes. That adds a whole layer of complexity to the problem. So what we did is we created tools and resources, both training and actual tactical tools like checklists and plans, templates, that will help HR and managers understand what grief in the workplace looks like, understand how to react to it, things to say, things not to say, but then also when loss occurs, how they work through it, right? Yeah. From communication to reentry, making sure that work is covered, there's some level of a contingency plan, those types of things to keep the business going and serve the people that are going to be out on leave in the moment. So I know you said high level, I probably went mid level on you, but
I liked it though. It was lovely.
Just think about two sides. There's two sides to the story and those sides are built and covered by the Brief platform.
Oh, I love it so much. And one thing that really stands out to me is I think a lot of times when we talk about, you know, challenging things like grief or things that are kind of mental health related or mental health adjacent, I think we get we get a little esoteric sometimes. We get very focused on training and, you know, feelings and all of those things. And they're really important. Don't get me wrong. This is so important. But sometimes you just need a checklist. Sometimes you just need to go, I don't know what to do. I have never experienced this before, or it's been so long since I experienced this. What do I need to do? What do I need to be thinking about? And, you know, I consider myself very lucky. I have never experienced a loss where I had to be responsible for kind of the logistical aspects of that. Mm-hmm. And thinking, you know, if that happens suddenly or unexpectedly, I don't know what I would do other than go to others and say, hey, how did you do this? How do we navigate this? Mm-hmm. And having a trusted resource that's also investing in kind of that depth that, you know, hey, we care about you. And here are some things to go through with a checklist, both for individuals and managers. I really love that because I think a lot of things either do one or the other versus both. Mm-hmm. And really kind of hit that cross section in a really wonderful way. So obviously, I think it's so important and so powerful to really make sure that's available. And I also know just from my own personal experience with, you know, how grief shows up at work, you know, one of the most challenging experiences of my career was when a colleague passed away. And while we knew that it was likely, it was still quite devastating. And having to kind of collectively navigate that loss while also trying to navigate it on an individual level was incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have had like a, you know, a more clear connection to support. And I mean, I remember when I was doing this, I was desperately trying to find grief counseling resources, therapy resources for my team that happened to be in different locations. And it was like impossible to find as well. Mm-hmm. So really, when you think about, you know, a death, there are all of these things that come into play. And So often the resources are so scattered, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. it can be really tough to get it right mm-hmm. without kind of something to hold on to, something to have as that backup plan.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And you talked about like the logistics. I mean, think about putting, basically assembling a wedding scale event in 3 to 5 days, right? Yeah. Like, and that's just planning the funeral, whatever you're doing from a service perspective. And then you get into the logistics of closing somebody's life.
Yes.
Right. That takes 15 months on average, an hour a day for 15 months. Right. So if you are the executor of the estate or the will, and you need to go and do all of those things, you are just by default going to be taking time away from work. Right. Yes. So there is a productivity component from, you know, call it presenteeism, I suppose, but there's a productivity component that is really, really big here that I think employers, A, don't know about in most cases, but they also don't know how to shorten that. They don't know how to provide resources to shorten that window. And I'm not saying you're going to get somebody back to full speed that's 100% from where they were before their loss. Because that's probably never going to happen. This is a new person. If it was that close of a loss, this is a new person, right? But you can support them in a way that really promotes them getting back to some level of normalcy. It's going to be a new normal, but some level of normalcy that makes work feel, like it is not as big of a task because you have this other job to do in closing out someone's life. So there's a ton to do. Just personally. And I typically don't think most businesses really understand that.
Absolutely. And I think there's something to be said, even just, you know, leveraging and acknowledging, hey, there's a lot that you have to do. And mm-hmm. I understand that as your managers, we understand that as an organization, because we've partnered with Breathe. I think that just really amplifies the level of like trust and psychological safety as well. Mm-hmm. Because without totally. Kind of the common knowledge or common experience of going through it yourself, you know, 6 months down the line, someone's like, oh, I need to take, you know, an afternoon and go to this office to handle this, you know, thing for my grandparents passing. You know, someone might be like, what? Like, you're not done with all of that yet? And that's not the response, obviously, we want to show up with. Yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure. I mean, we hear stories like that all the time, even from a productivity standpoint. There was a woman who shared with us, the loss of her husband. She was given essentially a month and just to take the month, come back at, you know, day 31 or whatever. 2 weeks after she returned, she told the story of her manager coming to her and saying, hey, your numbers are down. We got to figure out what to do about this. And she said, well, hey, I want to remind you that my husband passed away like 6 weeks ago. And his response was, I understand that, but we all thought you'd be better by now. And so like, those are the types of stories that we hear that like, we build around those stories. We work to eradicate those stories, to inform that manager, to make sure that that manager understands what is going to be happening for, I don't know, probably as long as he's going to work with her. But especially in, you know, call it the first year, right? There are a lot of things that can trigger like waves of grief. It could be smells, it could be sights, it could be music, it could be all of these things that you probably can't control, but you can control how you show up around people's, you know, anniversaries, birthdays, things like that. All those first things, the holidays, and for a manager to be able to go to that person and say, hey, I know this Thanksgiving is going to be difficult to you. I know we've got off Wednesday through Friday. I'd like to offer you the whole week. Or just to even say, I know this is going to be tough.
Yeah.
Right? Just to acknowledge it makes a world of difference. And I don't think most managers, and you'll hear me say this a lot, but most managers don't get trained on much. Let alone how to handle situations like this.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think of that example you shared, and it's devastating, but without the right resources, the manager is thinking about, hey, we've got to get your numbers back up. And I'm a big believer you can be empathetic, you can have better conversations, you can think about mental health, grief, trauma in the workplace, and still be focused on productivity. And it's just changing the conversation. It's like, hey, yeah. I know this has been an incredibly difficult time for you. You know, your numbers are down, you know, not super surprising. What can we do to help get your numbers back up? How can we support you and help you feel like you're getting to a place where you have what you need to feel successful? And that's such a, I mean, it's still very productivity focused conversation. It's not, you know, big warm fuzzies, but it is not, oh, we thought you'd be over this by now.
Right.
So I just, it's so disappointing to hear that example, but I also think, you know, it's probably pretty common. And, you know, I feel that way in my work sometimes too. You know, it's one thing, you know, trauma-informed practices, people get a little goosey when you start to talk about it. People don't want to talk about it. When we don't talk about it, we don't get better at all the things we're doing wrong. And all the ways we could be harming people we care about, even if we just care about them as colleagues. So I love that, you know, the work is happening and people are getting this information, but I also love that people are, sharing those stories with you. So you're going, hey, like, let's avoid this. Let's skip past all of these potential challenges that are absolutely happening within your org. So, you know, to speak more generally about grief, since, you know, your work is so heavily in the grief space, you know, for many people, you know, they may consider experiences of death, loss, grief as a traumatic experience. Many people may not. So, you know, I would offer that to anyone listening, just a reminder that, you know, whether or not something is traumatic is up to the experience of that individual. But when you think about grief and what you've seen and experienced in your work, what do you think, you know, leaders, HR leaders, the workplace in general really gets wrong most often about grief?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know that there's any one thing that people get wrong. But if I had to make a generalization, I think there is a lack of understanding about how grief can show up. I think there's a lack of understanding about the mental, call them symptoms, and the physical symptoms, you know, that the body reacts in a very physical way, from things like loss of appetite to loss of focus to headaches to all sorts of things, right? And that's just like just at the very front end of like getting into it. So I think it's mostly about just understanding it and understanding that it doesn't go away, right? People learn to live their lives. It doesn't mean that the grief became smaller than it was, right? There is some level of adaptation to life that we go through, but it doesn't mean it can't swell up. It doesn't mean, 27 years later was the example that I was given yesterday by a woman who suffered a pretty traumatic loss. And she said there are regular, what she referred to as flare-ups, right? Where she just doesn't have the emotional or mental or physical ability to do much. And it's been 27 years. And I think we are so ingrained in our society just to kind of, you know, dust it off, right? Get back up and get in the game. Right? Everything will be okay. That I think we don't give enough credit to the, not just the depth, but the longevity of grief.
Absolutely. And I think that dust it off mentality, that you've summed that up perfectly. I think in moments of grief, in moments of traumatic experience, I think that actually ends up doing more harm. When we're like, hey, get over it. Hey, dust it off. And that's not most people's experiences. You know, I just finished reading this book. It's a novel. It was fantastic. It's called The Collected Regrets of Clover, and it is about a death doula. And I think it's a fascinating story, but it also just really deftly talks about grief and experiences of grief and how it exists and how people kind of move through that. And I thought that was just so lovely. Highly recommend it if anyone's a reader out there. And it was something I shared with my therapist. The story was so interesting and so helpful to kind of think in a different way about grief. And she shared this, and I thought it was fascinating. And she said, you know, a lot of times we think of, you know, a death as the end of a relationship because that person's no longer there. And she said, I like to think of it as just a change. And you still have that relationship. You can still have, you know, conversations with someone. You still have that person as part of your life. It's just different. And I think that to me that was a helpful kind of reframing, because I think it also helps us consider that those relationships still existing for someone, how they linger and how they grow and how grief may change over time. So certainly there is just so much I think we don't know or we don't experience with grief, even just individually. And I think it's a little bit like how we talk about trauma, and that each person's individual experience and impact is going to be unique, and kind of having that flexibility and different supports can be really helpful, really beneficial.
Yeah. I think the uniqueness too is probably, I shouldn't say probably, I know it's very overlooked. And I think you referenced, or I talked to somebody earlier today who referenced, trying to find common ground with somebody when they tell you about a traumatic event. And the grief is interesting in that way, because just because, you know, two people lost their father doesn't mean those experiences were the same, right?
Right.
Doesn't right. mean the way they reacted and the way their body physically and mentally, like, were the same. Right. And I think we try to find that common ground, which is kind of a human thing to do.
Right.
Especially when you don't really know what else to say. But we don't really give a whole lot of credit just in general to how different and how nuanced everybody's path is.
Absolutely. I think that's perfectly said. If you had to give advice to, you know, someone listening to this podcast who is a manager, a leader, an HR professional who wants to do a better job showing up for folks in the workplace around grief, around loss, you know, outside of course, looking into bereave would be our number one recommendation. But what other advice would you have?
Yeah, I have a lot of it, but I think I will summarize it with decide whether or not you really want to do it. And if the answer is yes, there are a lot of things that you can do, but start with a plan. At the very least, have a plan for something to hold on to in that moment when you get the phone call from a manager that says, my teammate just suffered this loss, right? The more organized you can be, the better the communication is going to be, the better the expectations are going to be, the clearer things will be for everybody involved on what the business expects, what the manager expects, what the person expects. And you can really become aligned just by having a plan. And maybe you never use it, right? It's possible. And you don't need to spend a ton of time on it. I mean, call us and I'll give you a template to do it, right? Like, it's not that difficult to have a plan stored somewhere on what you're going to do, and so that you don't have to spend the time thinking through what you're going to do in that moment. You can just execute. So at the very least, like, just foundationally, get a plan together. Second tier of that would be start the conversation inside of the organization. Make death and trauma and grief and hard topics to discuss, make those things okay to talk about at work, so that people feel comfortable moving through these tough life moments, these hardships, and sharing them with you, because the more they share with you, the more you can support them, and the more likely it is that you will have that employee and a loyal employee for the foreseeable future.
Amazing. That's Perfect. I love that. Very actionable to do for sure. And then, you know, kind of a challenge, maybe a challenging question, but, you know, if there's someone who is listening in, who's maybe navigating their own grief journey, you know, what mm-hmm. advice do you have for them, you know, especially around, you know, how they can think about it as they're navigating work and their grief mm-hmm. journey?
Yeah, I think the thing that I hear probably the most is that people tend to regret not getting some level of help earlier, right? Whether that is a free weekly grief group at the church, or paying for a therapist, or going and utilizing your EAP, finding a friend to just have regular conversations with, or hiring a grief coach, or whatever it is that you think you might be willing to try. I think I would say try it, because from the experiences that have been shared with us, it does not get easier if you go it alone. It's really, really hard to raise your hand, but I promise you, you have the courage. I promise you, you have the strength. It's going to be hard at first, but the moment you raise your hand, you're going to find some glimmer of hope that you probably didn't have when your hand was down. So I know it's difficult, and it might be one of the hardest things you've ever had to do, but the sooner you're able to dig down and raise your hand, the sooner that you're going to be able to move on with your journey, not move on from your loss, but move on in your journey.
Right. Absolutely. Wonderful. Amazing advice. Thank you so much, Justin. Obviously, we talked a ton about Breathe, the work you and your team are doing. I would love if we could share, you know, how listeners can connect with Breathe, connect with you, if they're interested in exploring Breathe services, its technology for their organization. What could that look like?
Yeah, you can find us at Breathe.io. You can find me at Justin@Breathe.io. I'm on LinkedIn, relatively active. Breathe account is relatively active. The two of our co-founders are relatively active. So start Breathe.io or email me. And if there's any questions, we tend to lean into starting with service. So we end up getting a lot of referral or inbound traffic because there is an immediate need. I can promise you, we're not going to put a contract in front of you in an immediate need situation. So you have a place to turn if you need it without having to worry about taking out your credit card.
Amazing. And I will add, Justin, I mean, the resources you and Breathe put out, even just on LinkedIn, in terms of conversations, in terms of, you know, panel discussions, trainings, podcasts, it is amazing. So again, even if, you know, you are trying to navigate this without maybe much of a budget, maybe you're waiting till for next year's budget, you know, not sure what to do, just kind of want to explore more, there is something for you, and it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, appreciate that. A lot of generosity from people who are willing to join us on our podcasts, on our webinars, on our trainings. Most of it is free. Most of it you can find on our website. So if anybody is looking for, you know, budget-friendly education, and by budget-friendly, I mean free. A lot of really smart people, way smarter than myself, including you, Stephanie, can be found there and sharing their wisdom and their insights and guidance to help people along without having to take out the credit card.
Amazing. And I mean, if you ever have a doubt at whether a organization is living its mission, you know, the willingness to help support, jump to, you know, those resources that are free or low cost kind of consistently, to me, that's always a big green flag. And so, you know, I've spent time with you, Justin, so I already know it's a big green flag, but I'll offer a big green flag and endorsement to Breathe and the team there as well, just really being committed to changing the workplace for the better.
Yep. Well, thank you. Appreciate the green flag. We'll try to keep that green flag flying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. This was a wonderful conversation. Thank you all for joining us and listening in. And until next time, be well.